Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Police in Malawi's capital Lilongwe arrest organizers of an anti-government protest and about 30 others for allegedly inciting violence.
When they reached the district commissioner's office, instead of presenting the petition to the district commissioner, they wanted to take him to State House to present the petition to him there, which was not what was agreed upon.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, there are reports that the M23 militia has captured the town of Kiwanja.
Today morning, the M23 attacked the FRDC position in Rutshuru, and they succeeded to control the city of Rutshuru Center and Kiwanja.
The search for sustainable peace in South Sudan hit another obstacle as infighting erupts within the ruling SPLM party.
He continues to organize his own party, as we are all eyewitness to that effect. Comrade Pagan is busy with real SPLM party abroad.
And residents in Tanzania's commercial capital, Dar es Salaam, are struggling with water shortages after authorities announced rationing due to a drop in the water level at its main source, the Ruvu River. Those and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, there are reports that the M23 militia has captured the town of Kiwanja without resistance from government troops who retreated. M23 has been on the move all week and vows to keep going to capture Goma. Earlier on, I reached Jafar Al-Katante in Goma by phone to learn more on the situation. Hi, Jafar. What's the latest now?
Today morning, the M23 attacked the FRDC position in Rutshuru, and they succeeded to control the city of Rutshuru Center and Kiwanja. In the beginning of this afternoon, they continued controlling all the surrounding of Kiwanja and Rutshuru. Now, those cities are under control of M23, 100%.
What happened to the government forces? Were there no resistance?
According to locals, in Rutshuru, the FRDC resistant, but it was not enough. But in Kiwanja, there was not resistance anymore, because after losing the control of Rutshuru, they decided to leave Kiwanja, maybe to protect people, because Kiwanja is a bit influence than Rutshuru in population. Kiwanja has a lot of people than Rutshuru. Maybe it was a strategy to protect people, but we are still waiting for a statement or a communication from the armed forces, because until now the FRDC didn't talk anything about the ongoing operation. But what we know is, after controlling Kiwanja and Rutshuru, M23 did a popular meeting and changed the local chief, plus a new one, local chief in Rutshuru.
So since you say the Congolese forces didn't put up resistance, well, I don't think there were any casualties.
We don't have any records, so we can't talk about casualties, injured, or the number of deaths now, because no NGO operating in that area. Every people fled, and we don't have access to the M23 at the moment, and the army didn't communicate. So we don't know about the real number, or even if there was casualties or people who died, we don't know.
Now, M23 is in total control of that town, right?
Yes, M23 now control the area, the city of Rutshuru and Kiwanja, which are important because those cities are on a national road, the road number 2. And that road is the one linking the city of Goma, the main city of the Eastern Congo, to the north of the North Kivu province. So for now, the city of Goma will only depend by the border of Rwanda. As you know, DRC depends by importation. We don't produce more. We used to import everything in Congo. And many borders are now under control of M23, like Ishasha, Kitagoma, and Bunagana. And now M23 control a national road which link Goma to other borders. So even no goods will not get inside Goma because the road is blocked by M23 now.
Thanks, Jafar Alkatane in Goma. Talks between Ethiopia's government and rebel forces in Tigray continue in South Africa, where the African Union is mediating the highest level effort so far at ending the bloodshed. Ethiopia's Tigray region has run out of medical supplies such as vaccines, antibiotics, and insulin, World Health Organization officials said on Friday. Reuters news agency says the UN agency is also warning that many deaths are probably going unrecorded from preventable and treatable diseases. Todras Tsegaye, the CEO of Riot Media, a DC-based Ethiopian media platform, tells me that not much is known about the talks in South Africa, but people in the Tigray region continue to suffer.
A lot of things are kept in secret, so we're not getting a lot of information on that front. We know that special envoy of the U.S., the former Kenyan president Uhuru Kenyatta, the former Nigerian president Obasanjo, and others are taking part in the process. And the negotiators of the Tigray government and the Ethiopian government are negotiating. But things are kept to just very closely, so we're not getting that much to understand what's going on, really. What we all know, I think, is that the negotiation will end on Sunday, but probably this thing can be extended if the negotiators think that giving more time will help in bearing the fruit with regard to the negotiation. So that's what I hear from the sources.
Meanwhile, are the talks going in South Africa? What's the situation like on the ground in the Tigray region from according to your sources?
We have to understand that Tigray has been in blockade for almost 2 years now. It's a very under-resourced region, and this war has also had a very devastating effect on the livelihood of the people. And now the international community is not able to force the regime in Addis Ababa and Asmara to open the siege that's placed on the people of Tigray. So this is having a very, very devastating effect, which means banks are not open, so people are not using their money, are not getting their own money, by the way. The government has looted personal savings of millions in the region. That's one thing. Electricity is not provided, so it's just dark. You might have seen a report that Tigray fades completely from satellite imagery at night because there's no electricity whatsoever there. And other basic services, which are very important for a community to survive, are blocked. And also humanitarian aid is not reaching there. People are not getting humanitarian aid, so their life is so difficult. And in addition to that, there is a raging war right now. Even while the talks in South Africa are going on, the war is still raging. And people are dying. People are displaced in hundreds of thousands. And it's increasing the chaos and the crisis, the humanitarian. It's just worsening the humanitarian crisis there. So things are very, very difficult. For me, it's beyond words.
From your sources, what do the people in the region think of the talks, given that they're in this kind of situation?
You know, I'm not able to talk to people in Tigray because, you know, there's no communication. The phone service is also cut off as part of the blockade. So it's not easy to get people and ask their opinion. And the government has also prohibited from the independent media from going to that region and tell to the world what's really happening there. So it's not an easy task to understand what people are thinking. But we can say surely that the people didn't have that much hope. They have a wish for a peace to come, but I don't think they have a hope on this regime because the Abiy Ahmed regime doesn't see peace as a strategic choice. The calculation of the Ethiopian and the Eritrean government is if we weaponize hunger, and this is not my phrase, by the way, the United Nations International Team of Experts on Ethiopia said the Ethiopian government is weaponizing hunger and thereby undermining the survival of the people. And the regime's calculation is that if we can prolong this hunger for some time, the people's will to fight will break. And they also think that they're going to harm as deep as possible so that the people can capitulate to their demands. So that's the strategy that was employed by the Eritrean and Ethiopian government so far. I don't know what this will do after some time, but till now, the people are still fighting.
Todras Tsegaye, the CEO of Reyot Media, a DC-based Ethiopian media platform, he spoke with me from Silver Springs in Maryland. Meanwhile, the Ethiopian government on Friday condemned some Western entities over what it called irresponsible allegations of atrocities. In a statement released by the Ethiopian Communication Service, the government said such Western entities are mistaken, that by making such outrageous allegations, they could intimidate the government of Ethiopia to change course in its defensive measures against the TPLF. According to Friday's statement, the government is committed to the African Union convened peace talks because it's determined to end the conflict peacefully in a durable fashion. Ethiopia also said it's equally committed to ensuring accountability for violation of human rights and humanitarian law arising out of the conflict. Police in Malawi's capital Lilongwe on Friday arrested organizers of an anti-government protest and about 30 others for allegedly inciting violence. Lameka Masina reports from Blantyre.
Police spokesperson Peter Kalaya told VOA that the violence started when the protesters were denied permission to present their petition directly to the president at his state residence.
When they reached the district commissioner's office, instead of presenting the petition to the district commissioner, they wanted to take him to State House to present the petition to him there, which was not what was agreed upon. So when the district commissioner said no, then they came back, went into the street, and started storming buildings.
Kalaya said the protesters' demands were contrary to what was agreed upon in planning meetings for the march. He said during the meetings, it was agreed that the demonstrators would present their petition to the office of the district commissioner, not take it to the president's home. Kalaya said police arrested 33 people, including two protest organizers.
Among those arrested are Mr. Chisambele and Mr. Levin. At the moment, they are in our police custody and they are being charged with inciting violence.
On Thursday, Mbele led a similar protest in Malawi's commercial capital, Blantyre, where protesters presented their petition to the office of the district commissioner. The march was organized to protest the high cost of living and alleged corruption in the Chakwera administration. Protesters also accused Chakwera of failing to fulfill promises he made during his campaign 2 years ago, when he said will ensure food security to all Malawians and create 1 million jobs for Malawians once he got into power. The president said during his State of the Nation address this week that he's doing everything possible to address people's concerns. Police spokesperson Nikalaya said the arrested protesters will appear in court on Monday. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
The Australian and Canadian embassies in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, are the latest to issue terror warnings for the city after the US and British embassies on Sunday told their citizens to be on alert and avoid crowds. The Punch newspaper on Friday reported Nigerian security forces dismantled a terror cell and arrested members of the militant group Islamic State West Africa Province, ISWAP. Still, some shops have closed temporarily as a precaution, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Local security guards chatter Friday near a huge shopping complex in Abuja's Jabi district, the morning after it was closed due to security threats. Workers and shoppers were not allowed into the premises, and the street was blocked off to car and foot traffic. At least five foreign missions have issued security warnings this week, including the United States Embassy, which first alerted nationals on Sunday, warning of increased risk of terror attack across Nigeria, but especially in Abuja. Foreign missions said government buildings, places of worship, schools, markets, shopping malls, bars, and hotels were among the possible targets. The U.S. State Department ordered family members of U.S. employees to leave the Nigerian capital. In Jabi, one of the guards says he sees signs of increased vigilance.
We see security officers going about, some with the car, some going with their legs. We believe that when we see any problem or we see any movement, we contact any security.
The warnings by the embassies have stirred concerns among residents. Abuja Police Public Relations Officer Josephine Ade said authorities are stepping up security measures.
We are doing all we can. Besides, we've strengthened our security. Even though there is no cause for concern, no cause for alarm, we don't have any threats in our country.
Concerns of terror attacks have been growing in Nigeria, where militant groups have been pushing their operations beyond bases where they have been active for years. In June, authorities blamed Islamic State West Africa Province for a church attack in southwest Nigeria that killed 40 worshippers. 1 month later, the group claimed responsibility for attacking a correctional facility in Abuja and freeing hundreds of inmates. While hundreds of the escapees have been recaptured, many others remain on the loose, including more than 60 high-profile terror suspects. Security analyst Chidi Omeje says authorities are trying to assure citizens of their safety.
Our government on its part, naturally, should expect them to play down on the situation. You know, every government would like to project a good image of itself.
But Omeje says citizens must take warning by the foreign missions very seriously.
Citizens must at this point begin to think for themselves what to do, because I do not want to believe that Americans, the UK and all the other countries who have come up with this alert are just being mischievous. These are countries that have robust intelligence assets. We should not play with what they're informing us.
On Friday, Nigerian dailies reported a joint operation by the security forces uncovered a terror cell and arrested 35 suspected ISWAP members, including five commanders. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The Nations Security Council has called on the parties to the conflict over the Western Sahara to resume negotiations toward a settlement. The Security Council resolution approved Thursday extended the UN mission for the referendum in Western Sahara for a year. Western Sahara, the Spanish colony until 1975, is mostly desert but boasts immense phosphate resources and rich Atlantic fishing grounds. Morocco claims it and controls about 80% of the land. The Algeria-backed Polisario Front, which seeks self-determination for the local Sahrawi people, controls the rest. The two sides battled over the land until 1991, when the UN brokered a ceasefire and promised a referendum would be held to allow the Sahrawi people self-determination. That vote has not happened, and a dispute smeared until 2020, when the US President Donald Trump recognized Moroccan sovereignty over Western Sahara in exchange for the kingdom's normalization of relations with Israel. Ahmed Fathi, a UN correspondent and a global affairs analyst, discussed the stalemate with Moroccan ambassador to the UN, Omar Hilal.
The path to reach a solution is to come back to the round tables. As far as we are not talking to each other, as far as we are refusing to sit with each other, as far as we are not ready to come back to the round tables, of course there is no path. With Horst Köhler, the previous special envoy, there was a progress that had been made on psychological aspects, on the substance, on the autonomy, on the referendum. Everything had been discussed, and there was peace. There was a light where we can go. The direction was very clear. But unfortunately, when he left the facilitation, everything, we went back to the square zero.
The new Kenyan president Ratu, he made a statement that he is withdrawing Kenya's recognition of the SADR, the Polisario. What's your reaction on the Kenya's position, and is there now a breakthrough or more understanding in East Africa, the same way has been achieved on the western part of the continent?
We trust the word of President Ratu. He withdrew the recognition. He put a tweet on that. For us, the recognition have been withdrawn. Of course, there is interpretation about why he withdrew his tweet, but he didn't deny the tweet. But anyway, that's details. The important is that now we are starting a new page with Kenya based on our reciprocal interests. Political, economic, trade, agriculture, cooperation, security, trade, all. It's a real a large spectrum of field of cooperation, and that's what is more important.
That was Morocco's ambassador to the UN, Omar Hilal. He spoke to journalist Ahmed Fathi. Sid Omar, the Polisario Front representative to the United Nations, criticized what he called continued inaction by the Security Council. He also rejected what he called Moroccan attempts to impose its plan controlling the Western Sahara and granting it autonomy. After the Security Council vote, Omar said Morocco leaves the Sahrawi people with no other option but to continue and intensify the legitimate armed struggle for self-determination. However, he said the Polisario Front is committed to participate fully in efforts to negotiate a move towards self-determination. The search for sustainable peace in South Sudan hit another obstacle this week as infighting erupted within the ruling SPLM party. Riek Machar, the country's first vice president, was expelled from his position as SPLM vice chairman. The dismissal pours cold water on years of efforts to heal rifts among South Sudan's top leaders, the same rifts that caused the country's civil war. Sheila Pony reports from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
Dr. Riek Machar was the party's first chairman, a spot that placed him in a strategic position to claim the SPLM presidency if President Salva Kiir, who is also SPLM chairman, were to opt out of political parties. Kual Atem, SPLM secretary for political affairs, said this week that Machar and party secretary general Pagana Amom have been taken off the party register because they are trying to build up their own parties.
Though his office is just less than 200 meters away from the SPLM National Secretariat, and the same distance from that of the President Salva Kiir, he continues to organize his own party, as we are all eyewitness to that effect. Comrade Pagan is busy with real SPLM party abroad, and the wrong process as SPLM is being held hostage.
Though associated with the SPLM in opposition, SPLM-IO, Machar insists that SPLM-IO is not a registered party, and thus he never ditched the mother party as claimed by ATEM. Pokboth Baluang is the acting press secretary in the office of the first vice president.
The decision made by President Salva Kiir faction, SPLM-IG, to dismiss Comrade Dr. Riek Machar Teindurgun and Comrade Pagana Mum from the SPLM, and also as first deputy chair of the party and the secretary general of the party, it is unconstitutional based on the SPLM constitution. They are elected member. Such a dismissal of replacement is only possible if there is a national convention for the SPLM party, not a faction.
There are 14 registered political parties in South Sudan, according to records at the Political Party Council. However, in reality, there are more than 50 parties operating in South Sudan. That includes several factions of the SPLM, including Machar's, Amom's, and President Kiir's. The last, which is the original SPLM party, is known as SPLM in government. It was a split between Kiir and Machar that triggered South Sudan's six-year civil war in December 2013. Abraham Kuol Nyon, an associate professor of political science at the University of Juba, says the removal of Machar and Amom from their positions in the main party is ultimately a dispute over which faction is legitimate.
So this removal is about the ownership of the party symbol, is about the ownership of the party emblem, and it is about the ownership of the party of the SPLA.
Analysts say parties with the SPLM tag will likely have an advantage with voters in the next election, slated for late 2024. South Sudan is currently run by a transitional government, which recently extended its mandate by another 2 years. The country should expect such brokering at party levels in the run-up the elections. Sheila Poni for VOA News, Juba, South Sudan.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. Residents in Tanzania's commercial capital Dar es Salaam are struggling with water shortages after authorities announced rationing due to a drop in the water level at its main source, the Ruvu River. East Africa has been suffering a record drought that has seen little rainfall in Tanzania. Dar es Salaam's water authorities say they will shut off piped water to the city's nearly 6 million people every other day until water levels recover. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
52-year-old Elizabeth Maemo used to earn huge profits from her small street restaurant in Dar es Salaam. But now she's losing money due to the drought and the increase in the price of water.
Tunapata maji kwa shida sana. Tunanunua dumu mpaka shilingi 700.
She says, currently I buy one bucket for 700 shillings and I use around 15 gallons a day. I can say that in my business, the scarcity of water has affected me a lot. Maemo adds that I have lost many customers as they have no faith in the water I'm using. Tanzania, much like its East African neighbors, is experiencing little rainfall, with meteorologists warning a prolonged dry season. Authorities say the water supply from the Ruvu River, the main source of the city's water, has dropped from 466 to about 300 million liters a day, whereas the city consumes an estimated 500 million liters a day. Residents are now relying on local network of boreholes and wells. For those without a source of water nearby, they are left with no option but to buy from private vendors. With the demand high and supply low, prices have risen. Sufiani Msofe is a private vendor.
Katika kipindi cha miaka sita tangu nimeanza kufanya biashara hii, huu ni wakati
ambao unatengeneza faida. For the 6 years that I have delivered water across Dar es Salaam, this is the moment I'm generating a huge profit. But when you look at the water that we sell, it is salty and not suitable for drinking. They can at least be used for cooking and washing services. With global warming causing frequent heat waves, activists say the city needs a long-term solution to its water challenges. Florine Mshombos is an environmental activist from the One Planet Network, which advocates steps to tackle climate change.
Kutokana na ongezeko la shughuli za kibinadamu bila
Mshumbu says commercial activity along the Ruvu River has contributed significantly to lower water levels. What I think should be done to solve the challenges, he says, is to educate people about the importance of these water sources and the best way to protect. Climate change has been a topic of major concern in the East African region, with large areas of Kenya, Somalia and Ethiopia currently in the grip of severe drought. Charles Kombe for VOA News in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
In Nigeria, an estimated 19,000 people die from breast cancer every year, according to cancer advocates in Africa. Experts say the death rate is climbing there, in part, because patients are waiting too long to get screened. A Nigerian robotics engineer has designed a bra she says can save lives by helping to detect breast cancer early. For VOA, Timothy Abiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
In 2017, robotics engineer Kemisola Bolarinwa lost her aunt to stage 3 breast cancer. She says initially, her aunt called it a spiritual attack and was praying to God for it to go away. But as Bolarinwa mourned her loss, she decided to do something to help other women.
I have a conversation with one of the oncologists taking care of her then, and The thing I head on to in the conversation is that if we're able to detect this cancer at early stage, then the patient has the chances of getting cured. And I went into research, and my research shows that even out of 10 cases, 9 out of 10 cases can get cured.
Bolarinwa invented a so-called smart bra that takes readings of the breast and chest wall and translates the result to a mobile application within 30 minutes. She says the first model may be ready as early as April of next year.
We launched the prototype this February. That was when we launched the prototype, a working prototype to be precise. So, and after, we got responses from all over the world, from expertise, when I say expertise in medical field now, you know, the chipping more ideas, more guide on how we can go about it to get more accuracy, I mean, to get more efficiency, to increase the efficiency of the device. So that have to take us back to our drawing board.
Health officials say some 72,000 cancer deaths occur in Nigeria every year and that breast cancer accounts for the highest mortality rate. They blame late detection for the high prevalence. Bolarinwa believes her invention can bridge the gap and is seeking a government partnership to help deploy the device in local clinics where women can walk in and get screened.
Gloria Chinyere Oku, a breast cancer survivor, had a mastectomy in 2017 and has been battling anxiety and discrimination. But in October, she took part in a shirtless photo shoot as a way of overcoming her anxiety about her scar. She's also helping other cancer survivors embrace themselves through her work at Project Pink Blue, a breast cancer advocacy organization.
I said to the people who are down with cancer, it's not a death sentence. You know, keep pushing, keep hoping, keep believing, keep talking about your challenges. And eventually, we hope that one day there will be a cure for cancer.
In December 2017, Nigeria's president signed a bill for the establishment of the National Institute for Cancer Research and Treatment. The year after that, authorities began a four-year, $200 million cancer control plan to promote early diagnosis and treatment. But cancer advocates such as Ronsi Chidebe say the government projects were underfunded and poorly implemented.
We have a very poor health system. We have a system that is so complicated. We have a system that does not cover cancer screening. We have a system that does not provide cancer screening to the population.
Through October, aid groups held cancer awareness rallies promoting early detection and healthy lifestyles, says Fatima Dambata, a doctor with the nonprofit Medicaid Cancer Foundation.
We're seeing more cases because of the change in lifestyle, consumption of preserved foods, not low exercise, poor diets, and so on. We're trying to raise awareness, trying to make people take the screenings, the breast exams seriously.
Bolanwa hopes her innovation will help in this process. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy.
I really need
living happy, and I do what make me happy, and nobody can deny me that I'm blessed. I might be rough around the edges, maybe yes. I keep it nappy, and I do what make me happy, and nobody can deny me that I'm blessed. Self-preservation, self-elevation, these kind of these, they deserve celebration. No hesitation, no reservation, go for the big leagues, no relegation. Let's celebrate life, kick back and take five, and give thanks to the source that create life. To see a sunset or see a sunrise, and see my son born with these same eyes. To see my son smile bright in every gray sky. He's growing so fast, that's why every day I give it 100, now stop at 90. Praise the Almighty, the Father and 90.
I'm feeling blessed, oh. Say tonight, me and my guys, we can be new. Oh, oh. Stress, oh. Say tonight, me and my guys, we can get through. Oh, 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 oh. Yeah, yeah. Truly, make I tell you, say my life is like a movie. And if I tell you all these things, I don't say truly. Say my eyes don't see before my life come be. Say many try to fool me, but I dey pray for my enemies and truly. And I dey pray for my kids, that's my blessing. Pray for the friends I lost. I pray you never see no loss. Pressure, feet turn to pressure. I don't see where pressure make man record. Yeah, so make you live your life with judge and no regret. When my pressure, and I got it, man, don't get control. My brother make you know. Life where I live, say I live, I'm on the low. Hustle every day, I'm willing just to take control. Never about the money, man, I'm staying in my zone. Yeah,
say tonight, I'm feeling blessed. Oh. Say tonight, I'm
Jiggy jiggy, heavy heavy, all the girls love me, oh, like money, call me jiggy jiggy, heavy heavy, all eyes on me, Machiavelli, girl, you got me spitting, yeah, yeah, doing 240 on Lecky Egg, with the top down, no do rah, rah. You be drinking and the dirty money stinking, girl, you got me spitting, yeah, yeah, doing 240 on Lecky Egg, with the top down, all the shit, bia, bia, hey, da, da, no do rah, rah, no do.
You know they call me Fela in Versace. Fela in Versace. Fela in Versace. Yeah, 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 yeah. Fela in Versace. Fela in Versace. Fela in Versace. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Big shot, superstar, punisher, finisher, pull a kid, body car.
You want more like Bolivar.
Big shot, superstar, punisher, finisher.
Like two baba, ready set, don't bruise my heart, I'm delicate. I saw you standing there. Oh. Is the flashing lights gonna make me lose my will?
Mail, this a baby, yeah. Benny's in the 18 every year. Oh my G's in the every year. I'm number one in the million. Hey, like a fish and chips. From the north to the southwest and east, South Africa. Hey, tada. She gon' blow my cheeks. Fella in Versace. Mandela in the Rari. Rubber bands, where you get them from? Motherland, M-Zans.
Yeah, jiggy jiggy, heavy heavy. All the girls love me, oh, like money. Call me jiggy jiggy, heavy heavy. On me, Machiavelli, girl, you got me speeding, yeah, yeah. Doing 240 on Lecky Egg, bruh. With the top down, no do, bruh, bruh. You be drinking and the dirty money stinking. Girl, you got me speeding, yeah, yeah. Doing 240 on Lecky Egg, bruh. With the top down, all the shit, yo, yo. Hey, da, da, no do, bruh, bruh, no do.
You know they call me Fela in Versace. Fela in Versace.
Welcome to the bed.
manu mañana gari kotimo marame. You been the one my love diamond walk emoli chineli ne wash the coli onge be gale simple si pimbo la ke coli. Your ex man looking at me funny and I cause you to me. Mong am tele go ti maseng kube. I'm different thing funny bube. Nyazo song song marang nandaba. I can put you on. Wanna go nyala. Tengele ne moth. I'm on just my London. Speaking up a share see him ale malanda. Baby want me. Maslela na mono makelwa next week. Better tell him it's more than love. This time I see the light. Super, baby, when I wake, I'ma never look back. I shall depart, it's all been untied. Cause you know I want you,
when you touch me, baby, baby. Eba si chuga ni shutando du kwele, ntelu ba peke, izi tele. Oh, zi kwele, unga vun, izi nge. I think it's safe, I think it's safe, I think it's safe, I think it's safe. Ntelu la konge.
Look at my ramp, cause I don't need love. man, check, check, check. I thought I don't mind the bad, bad, damn, man.
Was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline Africa team, we say thank you for joining us tonight. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, in Washington, wishing you a very good evening.